From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
El Cerrito.
Union Square.
San Francisco.
Coming up, we'll see where media and the Occupy Wall Street movement intersect.
I think most of the coverage has been focused on the logistics and the drama of the street protest and not the messages.
Also, a modern Sri Lankan American musician gives folk music a global spin.
Frank Sinatra was a dope pop star because he had amazing talent and amazing material to work with. Michael Bublé, on the other hand, I don't know about Michael Bublé.
And dancing, the secret histories of Chinese immigration to San Francisco.
Those are hush-hush topics, and we are taught not to bring shame to the family, not to talk about things that are bad.
Stay tuned for Cross Currents. The Occupy movement is making itself heard again in the Bay Area. On Friday, hundreds of protesters in San Francisco took part in coordinated actions at courts and financial institutions. It was the second anniversary of the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision, which enabled corporations to donate unlimited amounts of money to political campaigns. Police arrested 23 people who chained themselves to banks and tried to take over the vacant Cathedral Hill Hotel. During the day, many actions had a whimsical flair, including a flash mob outside of the Bank of America building. They danced to a unification song. Gwen Winter from Oakland took part in a skit dramatizing the power corporations wield in the U.S. Wearing face paint and carrying a sign, Winter said the banks have gone overboard.
My God, the money has been sucked out of the people up to the top, and I'm facing foreclosure. So many people I know are facing foreclosure, and I worked all my life. Worked all my life, retired. Dot-com took most of my money in the 90s, and what was left I put into real estate. Ha, ha, ha. Now that's flipped over. So, you know, I just feel like people need to have the power back. We need democracy in this country. That's basically why I'm here.
Protesters taking part in Occupy Oakland plan to take over a building next Saturday to create a headquarters for future actions.
We're not helpless. We're powerful people.
Anna Maria Pascu, who also identifies as a member of the Occupy movement, says media need to pay more attention to the issues splitting the country apart.
Are you kidding? You know, they don't tell you anything. They tell you about the weather. Here's all these wonderful people getting out in the rain early in the morning when it's colder than you know what. And they're talking about the weather and ha 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 this and trivial that. I've been to marches where there's 7,000 people, and they don't speak at all. They don't say very much. They might say, oh, a few people, you know, they'll just say general things like some people were protesting, there is a few hundred, whatever. They're very vague, if at all. So, no, we're not being covered the way we need to be covered.
Pascu is particularly critical of commercial radio and television, newspapers and magazines, much of the mainstream press. But in San Francisco, other media outlets are trying to reinvent the marketplace.
So we are in the world headquarters of the San Francisco Public Press. We're at 5th and Mission, right around the corner from the San Francisco Chronicle. We can see them out our back window.
Michael Stoll is the executive director of the San Francisco Public Press, a nonprofit, non-commercial journalistic outlet that started up in 2009. Stoll reported for years in the mainstream media, including the Christian Science Monitor and the New York Times. But he questioned the values of ad-driven papers. He wants in-depth public service journalism to be available without any commercial influence. The San Francisco Public Press carries no advertising. It's actually modeled after public radio. And Stoll is about to publish his 6th print edition. He invited KLW's Ben Trefney over for a tour of his tiny headquarters.
It's about 600 square feet. This here is the conference room, a big just round table with a mishmash of unmatching chairs that we salvaged from various locations, including the street. You know, on the other side of the room is the warehouse, and we have about 5,000 old newspapers stacked up. In the other corner is our large format printer that we look at page proofs on for the newspaper.
We skip by the exercise room over here.
The exercise room is a large red exercise ball from somebody's Pilates class, as any self-respecting .org would have available. You look down about 30 degrees.
About 2 feet in front of you.
Yeah, about 2 feet in front of me. And this is the newsroom. It's an old folding conference table with another five helter-skelter chairs around it. You turn around another 90 degrees, and there's the executive suite, which is actually just, you know, four old mismatching desks and papers tacked to the wall. You turn another 90 degrees, and you have the cafeteria, which is actually a toaster, microwave, and coffee maker, and little pantry. And then off in the corner is our extension service, which is actually a place, a little room that we rent out for freelancers, and that pays most of our rent for this little space.
That's Michael Stoll, executive director of the San Francisco Public Press, giving a tour of his modest digs to KLW's Ben Trefney. They sat down at the round table to discuss the Occupy movement and other subjects from the public press's perspective.
The Occupy movement is a fascinating and inspiring and also flawed concept, coming out of some of the best tradition of grassroots protest. I've seen a lot of protests in my time as a journalist, probably attended over 100 of them. And I think this is unique in that it's such an open format for dissent that it incorporates just about every cause under the sun, at least from the perspective of the American left. Although there are some other causes thrown in that don't fit into that mold. And I think what's really surprising is just the level of energy that's been unleashed that nobody could have predicted before September. And it does seem like it has the possibility of creating or spawning or spinning off a whole bunch of smaller movements that have enough energy to affect change. But we don't know whether that's going to happen or it's just all going to get dissipated, you know, through infighting and disagreements built into this open format. You know, it's going to be very interesting to cover. I think most of the coverage in the press has been focused on the logistics and the drama of the street protest and not the messages and not the political debates that inspired people to show up in the first place. And I think that's a real loss and a misdirection. It's a habit of the news, especially nowadays when news organizations are so underfinanced, to focus on the drama and not on the substance.
You see the mainstream media covering the drama. How do you think they should go about covering the substance?
I think a lot of issues brought up by the Occupy movement and the Tea Party movement, for that matter, have been kind of bubbling under the surface and have not reached the popular consciousness. And I think that really has more to say about the focus of the news media.
What do you think it's covering instead, and why?
I think there's two things. One is because the news media has cut back so much, they're looking for the easiest stories to cover, and they're not doing the investigative reporting, the so-called enterprise reporting, where they have an idea and they're developing it and they're going out and seeking sources to talk about an idea creatively. It's more reactive. And that's happened more and more as the media have been cut back and tens of thousands of journalists have been laid off over the last 5 years. I think another reason is that the news business, by and large, has been for decades mostly supported by advertising, and it's been a commercial industry that has traditionally made boatloads of profit for big corporations that oftentimes are out of town and have no connection to the local community. The assumption is you're going to go for the news that interests the elites, because the elites are the people who are most likely to respond to the highest price advertising. And so there is an economic incentive to cover only certain kinds of news, typically news that responds to the concerns of the elites. And a whole section of the American public is cut out from that conversation. And so you have a business section instead of a labor section. You have a car section instead of a public transit section. You have a new home section instead of a rental section. And there are all these assumptions that we've made and come to accept about the standard, you know, layout of the news, newspapers, you know, but also broadcast, that I think now that the industry is kind of self-immolating, we as journalists have a chance, you know, a window to rethink and reconsider and, you know, reconstruct what the news is about, probably more in a public service framework.
Michael Stoll is the executive director of the San Francisco Public Press. You can check out their reporting at sfpublicpress.org. Or if you're in a tactile mood, go and pick up a copy of the newspaper for a dollar at one of 50 locations throughout the Bay Area. The next issue comes out February 15th. You're listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. Even with the founding of the San Francisco Public Press, the number of newspapers to choose from in the Bay Area is shrinking. But when it comes to Bay Area music offerings, there's certainly no lack of choice. Which brings us to our next story, part of our series, Bay Area Beats.
Beats!
San Francisco's B. Beeman set out from his home in St. Louis in pursuit of the mecca of classic rock and roll, a city where Jefferson Airplane still haunts the streets. But once he arrived on the West Coast, Beeman found only a few remnants of this once golden age of American music. Not to be discouraged, this first-generation Sri Lankan singer-songwriter steeped himself in the rich American musical traditions of blues and folk. His debut album, Beeman, tells stories of heartbreak and suffering with a disarming blend of humor and sincerity. B. Beeman sat down with KALW's Jamie Katsoufis to explain some of his songs and share a bit of his personal history. They started by talking about the album's single, Guttersnipe.
So Guttersnipe is a song, it's about a boy who's got no home, no money, no family, but he's somehow upbeat about it. So there's a desperation there and a hopelessness a little bit, just like he doesn't know what he's doing, but he thinks, this is the ticket. I see a train right there, I'm going to get on it and I'm going to be on my way to happiness.
I jumped the first train I saw, it'll surely take me home. If I had a mama, at least I'd have a place to go.
And when I was growing up, I just knew I wanted to be in California. St. Louis was not my cup of tea. Now I have a much better appreciation for it, but at the time I just wanted to get out of there and move west. You know, I love classic rock music, and San Francisco was like a huge hub of rock and roll music in the 60s and 70s. And I kind of expected that to be here, but it's changed a little bit, to say the least. You know, I thought I'd see Jefferson Airplane walking down the street or something. I was kind of a naive thing of mine. I was just thinking, you know, San Francisco is where the action is. But at that point, I wasn't even thinking about being a musician. Music was like a love of mine, but I didn't think I was good enough to be a musician professionally. Started on guitar, electric guitar, and I learned like all kinds of classic rock. I really liked all the Seattle rock music coming out in the early 90s. I really did. Soundgarden was probably my favorite band for a while, and they also have an Indian guitarist, which was, I thought was awesome, because I didn't see any brown people playing any music, really. I mean, black people were playing music, but I didn't see any brown people. That was a big influence on me.
In my
singing-wise, I'm pretty hard on myself about it, and I didn't think I was good until pretty recently, to be honest. And just a lot of trial and error, a lot of embarrassing sessions in my car. A lot of, like, singing along to really powerful singers, like, you know, Queen or, like, Stevie Wonder or something like that, you know. Something just totally over the top and making you sing ridiculous things at the top of your lungs, and failing a lot, and then finally getting a little bit better. Thunderbolts and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Hold me down, keep me back, I don't know what I'd do. My baby's with that man again, I thought that they was through. But now she's found a buku love, and here my heart lies ashen. Oh Lord, where were you in my crime of passion?
What I'm trying to do is take the best of American music, rock and roll, blues, I mean, what I think was like a golden age of music, and do my own thing, which is play acoustic guitar. Some people might be saying that I might be copying off of him, but I mean, I think it's, if I am copying, I don't necessarily care, because I think it's good music that if somebody hears it and they're like, go and take a listen to any of these artists that I remind them of, that's a good thing, I think. I'm trying to make really good American music with a global sort of twist on the lyrics, and kind of expand what people think about as popular music, because I see movies and art, paintings, you know, TV about any subject, but I don't see a lot of pop music about much more than being in love with love, you know.
Well, I was in the neighborhood, I thought that I'd stop by. I walked into her bedroom door, and much to my surprise, there they lay as lovers do, and then I got to smashing. Oh Lord, where were you in my crime of passion?
There's a lot of garbage coming out right now. I try to be PC about that and not say that, because I, like, will bump into people, you know, if I'm on the circuit and stuff, playing shows. But I don't think I would like to be a national pop star necessarily. There's a reason why I didn't try out for American Idol. I can sing. I could probably compete on there. But there's definitely a reason why I didn't do that, because I want to be a pop star on my terms a bit. Like, Frank Sinatra was a dope pop star because he had amazing talent and amazing material to work with. Michael Bublé, on the other hand, I don't know about Michael Bublé.
That was singer-songwriter Bea Beeman speaking with KALW's Jamie Katsoufis. Beeman's album will be available tomorrow, January 24th, on iTunes and at your local music store. For more stories on music from around the Bay Area, check out our website. It's kalw.org. That's also where you can hear all of our stories and subscribe to our podcast.
We're out to battle with a broken addle, and the natives are coming for you. Yeah. Well, the tissue's not the issue, it's a matter of the ladder. Carradine's a choker, I could broker any batter. I could sell ice to an Eskimo, in fact, I think I've done it before. Well, you talk a lot about killing.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. We just heard how the blues, rock and roll, and American folk music spoke so intimately to musician Bea Beeman. Beeman's family came to the U.S. from Sri Lanka, like so many immigrants who come here looking for a new life. San Francisco's Chinatown is full of that history, and that's where we'll go for our next story. Take a walk through Chinatown, and you'll see tourists taking pictures, vendors selling fruit, meat, and tchotchkes. But that's just what's on the surface. Walk around a little longer, and on the right streets, you'll discover a lot more. In this piece, produced by Angel Yang, KALW's Erica Mu takes us to the Chinese Historical Society of America in San Francisco to see how Lenora Lee comes to terms with her past through traditional Chinese music and dance.
Lenora Lee, a native San Franciscan dancer and choreographer, makes large-scale interdisciplinary work that tells stories of Asians in America.
As Asian Americans, our stories aren't represented, one, in the mainstream, and two, artistically.
Lee says her dance piece, Reflections, is a response to what she witnessed as a Chinese American growing up in San Francisco.
Witnessing a lot of people around me, friends, family, community members, particularly the Chinese and Asian American men, struggle and be challenged with figuring out what their path was in life or what their journey was versus what other people thought they should do. So finding one's own and having the courage to step out and follow your dreams, so to speak.
Reflections is dedicated to the stories of three generations of men in Lee's family. Her paternal grandfather came to the United States from an area in southern China called Toisan as what's called a paper son.
Meaning that they came over illegally, they bought the identities of somebody that was legal here in order to land in the United States. So they risked quite a bit coming over here. And they left their family, they left the villages, and were trying to continue on, passing on the traditions and the values, but also they knew they had to separate and go through a tremendous amount of hardship.
Lee's father grew up in the United States, but lived in a traditional Chinese family. He was the oldest son of a family of six children. After both of his parents passed away suddenly, he had to make decisions and carry on all the responsibilities for the family. He was straddling two worlds.
I interviewed my father and a lot of his stories about loyalty to family, loyalty to tradition were in there, and how he chose to break away from this sense of loyalty to find his own path.
Lee describes her choreography as a collage rather than a straight narrative. One of the main characters, Raymond Fong, lived through the 70s and 80s in San Francisco's Chinatown, when there was a lot of gang violence between those born in America and those born in China.
There were a large influx of Chinese coming over from Hong Kong and mainland China, and so there was a lot of tension between those two groups, and he witnessed firsthand a lot of his friends pass away because of this violence.
Lee says the Chinese were subjected to racial profiling in Chinatown during the 70s and 80s. They would often be stopped and searched by the police randomly.
Then they were young males that they would often just get searched, and this was a normal routine.
Lee says these are hard stories to tell, especially for the Chinese community.
Those are hush-hush topics, and you don't want to, or we are taught not to bring shame to the family, not to talk about things that are bad, not to talk about things that could shed some bad light to the communities and to the family members. So in a way, there's a certain amount of courage for people, particularly in this piece for my father, for the other artists, for Ray to step forward and say, hey, this is really what was happening at the time.
Lee wants to explore that history and debunk many stereotypes of Asian culture.
So I wanted to dispel this myths of martial arts just as spoofs or just as martial arts flicks or just as martial arts being made fun of by other cultures, and really say, hey, you know, there's a strength there that you cannot see. There's a strength that's moving through these bodies. There's a strength in the forms that is so deeply rooted in Asian cultures that practice martial arts. And this is what you cannot see. This is what we do not talk about, but can it be represented in the piece?
For Lee, Reflections is a way to remember her family's journey from China to San Francisco and back. It connects her to her history and her cultural heritage, to the stories that are hard to put into words, but live on through dance. And Lee hopes it'll be an inspiration to others, Chinese or not, to honor their family struggles and heal the wounds of the past.
That piece was produced by Angel Yang, who is a student reporter at Mills College in Oakland. And you can find all of our stories and get in touch with us through our website. It's klw.org. That's also where you can subscribe to our podcast. You've been listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. The team includes Hana Baba, Julie Kane, Martina Castro, Jen Chien, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hoff, Julia Lundberg, Casey Miner, Nina Morente, Erica Mu, Rena Palta, Brian Pelletier, RTM's Kuna Hofs, Stephen Short, and Judy Silver. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio. The music you're listening to is the San Francisco-based band Adios Amigo. Adios Amigo will be performing on Friday at the Hemlock Tavern in San Francisco. To hear them and all of the local bands featured on our show, visit us at our website. It's klw.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.